Looking at the tactical screen, Takahashi saw a city that showed no signs of life. Buildings, both round and square, some metal, some mirrored, stood in straight-edged rows. He saw bridges and streets. Part of the city was covered with waterways that looked both narrow and deep, but he did not see boats, cars, flying vehicles, or pedestrians.
Maybe there are any emergency shelters.
Suzuki might have been right, but to Takahashi, the city looked abandoned. There would have been cars along the roads if the populations had hidden in shelters. There would have been debris. The city looked like it had been stripped bare by time. Most of the buildings were a few hundred feet high, but some stood a couple of thousand, vanishing into the perfectly flat dome of shining energy.
Captain, we can't navigate around these buildings. The Sakura doesn't handle like a fighter. She's too big.
Take us over open water, Commander.
As the captain of the Sakura, Takahashi Hironobu would not let her die until she had completed her mission. If they could just hold on for a few minutes more, she might not need to die at all.
What's our fuel status?
We're out!
We're still flying!
We should have gone down 3 minutes ago!
Just keep us up!
He looked at the timer by the tactical display. 5 more minutes. He did not know what was keeping the Sakura in the air. He did not know the source of the miracle, but he hoped it would last. A few more minutes, and the broadcast engine would be charged. Then they could launch the transport and broadcast to safety. A three-dimensional holographic map showed in the air above the captain's table. The map showed the cityscape, along with a representation of the Sakura flying above it. Takahashi walked to the chart table for a closer look. He bent so close over the scrolling holographic city that he could see through the translucent landscape.
It's not a city. It's an artifact.
He remembered a conversation from before everything went wrong, a briefing Admiral Yamashiro had held with his four captains. Seen from thousands of light years away, some of the stars in Boda's galaxy appeared dormant. They'd been dead for hundreds of thousands of years. The aliens must have mined them all those millennia ago. The occupants of this planet had probably killed off their nearest neighbors first. Who knew if they had even seen resistance, let alone retaliation? If they had, how long had it been since enemies had knocked on their door?
Captain, I found our route. I'm going to need to clear a path. May I engage weapons?
We came here to destroy the planet.
Maybe there is no one left here to destroy. What if they died 50,000 years ago, and all that remains are the machines they created?
Captain, there's something out there!
Where?
I'm changing course!
The holographic map showed the outer fringe of the city, followed by an endless plain of pristine cerulean sea.
There's nothing on the display!
Takahashi looked at the timer. They had 3 minutes and 20 seconds to go. Just another 200 seconds.
The caskets are loaded.
Okay, get out of here, Warren. Every man off the transport. I need to launch this bird. Get the atmospheric locks opened.
I've never worked a control tower before.
How hard can it be? It's automated.
You should take somebody with you, just in case. How are you going to pilot a transport? You have a badly sprained ankle and a broken arm.
It's not broken.
It ain't whole.
Good thing I'm not flying far.
You need a co-pilot. Somebody to help launch the caskets.
Senior Chief, you are wasting valuable time. Now get to the control tower and get the locks open.
Though it was not proper protocol to salute another enlisted man, Senior Chief Warren saluted Oliver and left the cockpit. Oliver didn't see the salute. He had already turned back to his controls and powered up the engines. He looked at his watch. The SIPs were overcharged. With a simple computer command, he could make them explode. It would take the Sakura's broadcast generator another minute and a half to finish charging.
90 seconds. If I can hold out for 90 seconds, they can escape.
Oliver's dislocated shoulder hurt, but he ignored the pain. The injury rendered his arm useless for climbing and lifting, but he only needed one arm to fly the transport. Warren and his men solved the riddles of the control tower quickly. Even before Oliver managed to check the power to his booster rockets, the sled beneath his transport came to life, pulling the bird forward toward the first of the atmospheric locks. Up ahead, the heavy metal door slid open.
Thank you, Senior Chief Warren. You deserve to survive. You deserve to live.
There's nothing on the tactical.
15 miles and closing. It's moving slowly. It's shadowing us. looks like it's moving into our path. It's advancing slowly, like it's stalking us.
I need a visual. What is it? Where is it?
Maybe the tachyon sleeve was distorting their readings. The sensors and computers inside the ship could only map the area around the ship. Suzuki and the weapons officer had located the threat using old-fashioned radar, but the data did not show on Takahashi's holographic display.
Turn us around. Take us back over the city. We don't want to fight.
Aye, aye, sir.
Takahashi looked around the bridge. It was the only choice he could make. Perhaps the aliens would think twice before engaging a battleship over their city.
It's coming after us!
Takahashi hit the communications panel.
Landing Bay 3! Oliver, are you launching?
This is Senior Chief Warren. The transport is passing the second lock, Captain. The outer door is opening. It's out!
Shields up!
When the threat appeared on his holographic map, he saw it was not a ship or a fleet, but a swarm. It looked like a cloud of fine lines. He tried to get a clearer picture, but his computer would not cooperate. All it showed him was a cloud of tiny lines. If the hologram was right, the alien defenders flew ships no bigger than a pencil.
They're robotic! I'm detecting a signal!
Block it! Disrupt the signal! Lasers, torpedoes, fire everything we've got!
The enemy drones looked small and weak on the holographic display, but they moved quickly. Even before the lasers fired, the swarm scattered.
Clear path! We need to break through!
The Sakura's lasers obliterated drones by the hundreds, but that barely thinned the swarm. Torpedoes cleared pockets, not paths, and the pockets filled with new drones almost immediately. The Sakura's weapons were designed for ship-sized enemies, not swarms of tiny ones. The drones did not return fire. They formed a cloud in which the individual units moved independently like a swarm of mosquitoes. Seeing that his ship was now surrounded by short-range weapons, Takahashi realized that the end was near. He had come all this way, only to find out he was unprepared. One of the drones neared the ship. From a mile off the Sakura's bow, the drone fired a single bolt of light that seared through the shields and punctured the hull. There were no casualties and no explosions, but the wound was fatal. With a breach in the hull, the Sakura could not broadcast. Takahashi heard the report and looked back at the map in time to see the swarm close around his ship. Corey Oliver left his transport on autopilot and went into the kettle. He would give the Sakura a minute to launch, then he would fire the five SIPs he had loaded in the launch device. They were overcharged and ready. The hatch stood open at the rear of the transport. Oliver went to the computer station and looked at the timer, then peered back at the sky through the open hatch. The Sakura should have broadcasted already, but he could see her hovering slowly over the city. Smoke rose from her bow. He inwardly apologized to the men he had hoped would escape and fired the pods at the planet below. Earth date, December 2, AD 2517. Location, Nebraska Cree. Galactic position, Perseus Arm. Astronomic location, Milky Way. Michael Kumalo, probably the greatest military philosopher of the modern era, said, "Give a fool a rope, and he will hang himself. Give that fool an army, and he will hang his nation." Truer words were never spoken. With its population of somewhere between 3 and 4 million people, Nebraska Cree should have been an easy evacuation. All Admiral Leota needed to do was escort the barges to the planet, park them above the major townships, and arrange a semi-efficient shuttle service. Too timid to risk a confrontation with the Unified Authority, Leota only flew 3 of the 25 barges to Nebraska Cree at a time. He kept the barges in a tight cluster near the broadcast station. Instead of a short trip in and out of the atmosphere, the transports were forced to travel halfway across the planet, turning a 20-minute hop into an hour-long journey. Because he had only a few million refugees to rescue, Leota would get all the people off the planet all right. But Nebraska Cree was a galactic breadbasket. This was a planet with 3 million people that produced food enough to feed 100 million people for an entire year. Most of that food sat crated and ready to load. But thanks to Leota's incompetence, all of that food would end up as ash when the Avatari scorched the planet. Sitting in a one-on-one virtual debriefing with the soon-to-retire Admiral Leota, I allowed my mind to wander as he bragged about botched evacuations and battles in which our casualties had been way too high.
We lifted nearly every person off Bangalore, and we will have rescued the entire population of Nebraska Cree. Not a bad record.
What about the UA attacks?
I am happy to report that we have held them off.
As I understand it, we have lost 15 more ships since beginning this rescue operation. It sounds like the Unifieds have stepped up their attacks.
Yes, there have been more attacks.
Do we know what set them off?
I'll ask my pal Andropov next time he calls.
So, to sum it up, we've lost 15 ships, and we're not going to get enough supplies off Nebraska Cree to feed the people we are rescuing. But you are pleased with how things are going.
15 ships? That's not a lot of ships. Our fleet is 1,000 times larger than theirs. We can crush them anytime we choose.
Anytime we choose, Admiral? I choose now. Let's put together an attack plan. I want to put those bastards out of business before we lose another boat.
It's not that easy, General. Invasions need careful planning. How are you going to deal with the broadcast problem? Once we get our ships there, we won't be able to bring them back. The Unifieds aren't going to sit back while we hack into their station again.
Admiral, right now we are losing two wars at once. The aliens have us on the run, and the Unifieds are picking off our ships. At least one of those situations must be fixed.
General Harris, Intel intercepted a distress signal from the Norma Arm. Know anything about it?
Not offhand.
Someone destroyed a UA battleship near Solomon. Do you know anything about that?
Sure, I was there.
You were given orders to stay away from Solomon, General.
I am aware of that, sir.
Were you anywhere near New Copenhagen?
No, sir.
Three Unified Authority ships were destroyed near New Copenhagen.
No shit? That's great.
Did you have anything to do with it?
I wish I had. Do we know who did it?
I am asking you.
I wish I knew. I'd give him a cigar.
I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt, Harris. You admitted going to Solomon, so I'm going to assume that you're telling the truth about New Copenhagen.
I'm leaving for Terrano in a few hours. We need a permanent home for our refugees. They can't stay on Providence Cree.
And you think Terrano is the place?
It's got oceans and lakes. There's a reasonable amount of oxygen in the atmosphere.
I thought all the plants were destroyed. That's what happened on Bangalore.
Not in the deep water. Seaweed and algae are good oxygen producers.
What about Olympus Cree? That planet had oceans and lakes.
It's in the Orion Arm. It's too close to Earth. Admiral Leota, I think you might be in over your head commanding the enlisted man's navy.
What?
I don't think you are fit to command the enlisted man's navy.
Who the hell do you think you are, Harris?
I think you should step down.
Yeah, I bet you do. Is that what you told Jolly, too, that he should step down?
Admiral Jolly was killed by a looter.
I am not giving up my command. Don't look so smug, Harris. If I were you, I'd watch my back.
Before leaving the conference room, I contacted Ray Freeman.
Ray, have you ever wondered who made the decision to abandon Solomon?
You did.
I didn't have any choice. We needed more ships. We needed a fleet and barges. Admiral Leota made the decision to abandon the planet. I wanted to send barges and an armada, but Admiral Leota overrode my suggestions.
Why are you telling me this?
I just tried to relieve him of command. He doesn't want to step down. In case you're interested, he's touring Providence Cree at the moment. I guess he feels safe there.
Silence. Freeman broke the connection about 10 seconds later. 5 hours after that, I received news that Admiral Curtis Leota had been shot while visiting the planet. The sniper vanished without a trace. I never asked Freeman about Leota's death. He'd become something of a shadow of his former self, spending most of his time alone. We were back on the Bolivar, Holman's ship. Freeman, who had never been much of a talker, spent most of his time on the observation deck, sitting alone. Something about him had changed. I could see it in his eyes. Freeman's gaze had always had this menacing intensity. Looking into those eyes used to remind me of staring down the muzzle of a double-barreled shotgun. He didn't just look at the world around him. He seemed to x-ray it, peel it apart with his stare, and coerce it into revealing secrets. As I thought about it, I'd seldom seen Ray Freeman verbally threatening victims. He didn't need to make threats. His eyes did it for him. Not anymore. Only a week had passed since we left Solomon, but in that time, much of the menace had evaporated from his gaze. Now he looked tired, worn down by the universe and ready to call it quits.
Is Wallace any better than Leota?
He's decided to resign his commission.
Smart choice. From what I heard, he was even more of an asshole than Leota. He'd have sent me to retire him by the end of the week.
I'm going to ask Jim Holman to take over.
Holman? Good man.
Ray, what's bothering you? He did not answer. I knew the answer. Since learning that his sister and nephew had died on New Copenhagen, Freeman thought about nothing but saving lives. He'd become obsessed with rescuing the masses, not caring what sins he might commit along the way. He'd developed a messiah complex and would have happily laid down his life saving the people on Solomon. Instead, he'd had to turn his back on them, and he couldn't live with it. I have some recon I need to run. This Freeman-shaped cadaver took in my words and said nothing. Look, the Unifieds are watching everything we do. They want their barges back, and they're going to keep harassing our ships until we run out of Navy. Freeman just sat there, staring at me, his face devoid of emotion. Did he agree or disagree? Did he care? We can't keep sending people to Providence Cree. I want to start relocating refugees to Terrano, but I can't do that until I know it has a breathable atmosphere.
You want me to take you to Terrano?
No.
No?
No. I want to send Sweetwater and Breeze to Terrano.
How do you plan to get him there?
We'll work out the details later. Just get them on the two-way, within the hour. I returned to the bridge to have a word with Holman.
General, I was just going to send someone to find you. Are we going to Terrano?
Captain Holman, how much do you know about ancient Rome?
I know about the Praetorian Guard.
Really? Are you a fan of the classical age?
Not until recently. Am I looking down the barrel of a promotion?
A big one.
Admiral Wallace, no?
He won't stand in your way.
Is he standing at all?
What do you mean by standing?
Did you kill Wallace?
I haven't killed anybody.
What about Admiral Jolly?
Shot by a looter. That was on Gobi. You saw the report.
And Admiral Leota?
I was as surprised as anybody.
Is Wallace dead?
He's alive and planning his retirement.
Isn't he next in line?
He was, but he didn't feel up to running the show. Frankly, I think that was an excellent decision.
And now you're placing me in charge?
I think you're the man for the job.
What if it doesn't work out?
I'm sure it will work out. I have every confidence in you.
Did you have every confidence in Admiral Jolly?
He was a formality. I was obligated to give him a shot because of his seniority.
You killed him.
Not me. It was the looter.
The looter you did not capture. The one you left on Gobi to die. Was Leota killed by a looter?
I don't know. I wasn't there. Do you accept your new post?
Are you gonna kill me if I screw up?
You'll do fine.
What if I run into trouble?
I need a commander. Are you in or out?
I'm in.
Glad to hear it. You couldn't have taken this post at a better time. We're about to launch a sensitive operation.
I hate to start off on the wrong foot, General, but moving refugees to Terrano is a bad idea. General Hill will see it coming.
General George Nickel Hill was the head of the Joint Chiefs.
He knows our situation. He'll expect us to move refugees someplace with large bodies of water. That means Terrano or Olympus Cree.
Those are the planets with the best chance of sustaining life.
What about New Copenhagen? It has oceans.
I've put some thought into this. I think we can draw their navy away.
How do you suggest we draw them away?
By invading Earth. It's time we went on the attack.
Both Sweetwater and Breeze took the call. They had the lab to themselves.
You want us to send a team to Terrano to survey the planet? That could present a problem. We could probably get away with running remote tests from a satellite, but a certain Mr. Andropov is going to ask questions if we send an explorer.
The dwarf was right, but I did not see any other options.
What can you get from your satellites?
We won't be able to determine sustainability. We'd need soil samples for that. We can certainly determine oxygen and radiation levels. You probably already have those.
We need to know about drinking water and farms.
You'll need filtration equipment for potable water. The ash in the atmosphere is a pollutant. The lakes are contaminated, but they're not especially toxic.
We have enough food to last 6 months. After that, the colonists will starve if they can't raise their own food.
We'd suggest taking them to Earth, but we'll need to evacuate Earth soon.
You can worry about that next month. Right now, let's talk about Terrano.
Well, there's no way to test the water without landing a team.
Even if we authorized the work, we never persuade the UA Academy to land a team out there. And Dropoff doesn't trust us. The Linear Committee just sent a team of auditors to check our work.
That's a problem.
You have a spy ship. Maybe you could gather samples.
The Unifieds would spot our transports.
If they don't trust you, they may be listening in on us now.
Not on our side, they aren't. We've devised a secure communications console.
We could send explorers to all of the planets.
What?
They might suspect something if we tested sustainability on Terrano, but what if we sent teams to New Copenhagen, Olympus Cree, Gobi, Solomon, Nebraska Cree, and Bangalore?
Solomon is a confirmed kill?
That is affirmative.
We can say we're running tests on all seven planets. We can tell them we need to start searching for a suitable place.
They haven't started searching?
We think they have, but they haven't informed us about their progress.
How will they react if you suggest a survey?
Sweetwater sat on his tall stool, staring into the camera. One moment his face flushed with anger. He might have been more worried about his own arguable existence than the millions of lives spread out across our last remaining worlds. Then he smiled.
Brilliant. Even an idiot like Andropov will recognize the importance of creating an evacuation plan.
We were running reconnaissance. For the mission, we took the spy ship. I asked Don Cutter to captain the ship. We broadcasted in behind Mars, knowing that the Unifieds had figured out that trick. They might detect our entrance, but that did not necessarily translate into their tracking our route. The moment we entered the Sol system, Cutter engaged the stealth generator, and our spy ship became invisible. We hoped. I stood on the bridge beside Captain Cutter, staring out the viewport.
Do you think they figured out a way of peeking through our cloak?
They probably don't even know we have a stealth cruiser.
I think they figured that out.
General, has anybody ever mentioned that you're a pessimistic man? You go through life a lot happier if you're an optimist.
I'm not pessimistic. Do they have ships out there?
Dozens of them. They're searching everywhere, but they can't see us. We came to look at their fleet, right? You wanted a peek at their forces? Here they are.
I nodded.
So let's look.
Cutter led me to his tactical display. The holographic display showed a chunk of space that included Earth and its moon. A rainbow of different colored threads, each as thin as a strand of a spider's web, traced the paths of ships as they circled the planet in search of the intruder. The scene fit Cutter's description precisely. The Unifieds were everywhere. We had kicked the hornet's nest. Cutter pointed to the legend at the bottom. Red lines marked courses traveled by the new generation fighter carriers. There were only two of them. Gold threads marked the paths of three new generation battleships. The computer tracked five Perseus-class battleships and three Perseus-class carriers. Even throwing in cruisers, dreadnoughts, destroyers, and frigates, the Unifieds only had 58 capital ships.
Look, here comes the cavalry.
The tactical display marked broadcast anomalies with X's. Seven of them appeared. Three of them dissolved into the red lines that marked new generation fighter carriers. The other four resolved into the gold of new generation battleships.
65 ships. Do you think that's all they have?
They'd have a lot more if you hadn't stranded them at Olympus Cree.
We spent another half hour watching their movements. No new ships appeared on the scene, though a few ships broadcasted out.
Do you have what you need?
How close can we get to Earth without their spotting us?
They're already on alert. We'd be taking a risk.
How big a risk?
Those ships are traveling at thousands of miles per hour.
The fighter carriers aren't moving.
They're preparing to launch attack wings.
But they don't know where we are.
That's the standard procedure when you're dealing with an invisible threat. In another minute, they will start firing particle charges.
I stared down at the display. With their fighters launched, the Unifieds expanded their net. They had started out between the Earth and its moon. Now they had spread their search beyond it.
Particle charges? Could we withstand a direct hit?
Easily. They don't use particle charges to destroy enemies. They use the charges to locate them.
What if we lowered our shields?
How do you feel about radiation poisoning?
I'm not committing suicide until I can take the Unified Authority down with me.
Freeman and I sat in an empty transport.
Have you reached Sweetwater and Breeze?
I'm here.
Is Dr. Sweetwater there as well?
It's just me this time. William's checking the results from the survivability survey. General, do you remember Williams mentioning the auditors that the Linear Committee has sent to oversee our work? He's leading them on quite a wild goose chase. I think he has them counting the number of stars in the galactic eye. Why are you laughing?
He's really making them count stars? Aren't there billions of stars in the galactic eye?
78 billion in the section he's given them.
Well, they can't count 78 billion stars. It would take a lifetime. No one is going to count that many stars.
He told them it was an accounting irregularity.
An accounting error in the stars?
He found a glitch in their programming.
That caught Freeman's attention. He stared at the communications console, and I saw the old intensity in his eyes.
What do you mean?
How long have we been dead?
I did not answer.
Am I a brain scan? Is this a simulation of the Arthur Clockwheel?
What are you talking about?
Sweetwater loaded a list of stars and locations into an accounting ledger and gave it to those men. They didn't even bother looking at the number of entries. They didn't care that there were billions of entries. Men get overwhelmed when you hand them a ledger with 78 billion entries. Computer programs begin counting without checking the volume of the work.
They're government number crunchers. They probably get paid by the line.
78 billion lines? William built a randomizing engine into the database. Every time they complete 1 billion lines, the engine shuffles the data and reinserts it back into the file.
Well, they probably think they hit the jackpot.
Whoever programmed the simulation didn't understand the physics of the Arthur Clarke wheel. It uses centripetal force to create gravity instead of a generator.
What are you talking about?
I visited the control room last night. It has a gravity generator.
Maybe it's there for backup. Maybe it's there in case something goes wrong with the rotation.
It's cosmetic. I turned it off, and nothing happened.
Maybe the people who built the wheel built the switch in as a joke. You said it yourself. The wheel generates its own gravity.
When did I die?
I did not answer.
How did I die?
You died on New Copenhagen.
Still absolutely silent, Freeman gave me the slightest nod. He approved. I had risked everything. Hearing that he was dead, the ghost of Arthur Breeze could shut down, and he could very well take Sweetwater with him. But Freeman wanted him to know the truth.
I died in the mines, didn't I?
Yes.
And William? He died too?
He died taking the bomb into the mines. I remember the day I learned that I was synthetic.
I never liked that term, synthetic. General, you have a heart beating in your chest. It's not made out of plastic. You have a brain and hands and lungs that hold air. None of those things are synthetic. You're not like a human, you are a human. I suppose I am too.
Are you okay? What are you doing?
I just pricked my finger.
What?
I pricked my finger with a dissection pin. The pain was exactly as I always remembered it.
Why did you do that?
I wanted to see my blood. I bleed like a living creature. You see me, General. Do I look like a real man through human eyes?
Exactly like you looked the day you went into those caves.
I did a better job simulating my blood than they did simulating the space station. It's perfect.
You are a perfect virtual model of the man I knew on New Copenhagen.
But I'm stuck in this machine.
Your universe is as vast as mine. You can visit simulations of every known world.
How about a world in which I would really exist?
I remained silent.
When a drop-off figures out we're helping you, he'll unplug us. I suppose that wouldn't be as bad as dying.
The real Arthur Breeze had been ripped apart by giant spiders. I didn't speak.
Thank you for being honest. You and Raymond, you were always truthful with us. You always were. What did you do when you found out you were a clone?
I went to a bar with my sergeant. He drank 3 glasses of Sagittarian Crash and got so drunk we nearly died.
Did it help?
And the next morning I felt like someone had stabbed a knife into my skull. That wasn't helpful. I was still a clone. Getting drunk didn't change that. It softened the blow. It got me through that first night.
Maybe I need to do that. You've got an excellent bar on the wheel.
Hey, don't hit it too hard. We need you sober. They made you so you puke and piss and fall down when you get drunk. The original you didn't handle liquor so well, and the virtual you won't handle it any better.
Oh, I doubt they will allow me to die in an intoxicated stupor. There's enough air to start a colony on Terrano, but you're going to need an oxygen generator until you establish a significant plant population. Farming's going to be a problem. The surface soil's ruined. Your colonists are going to need to dig 3 feet down to find soil that can sustain life.
But it can be done?
I'm always amazed by the things human beings achieve when their backs are against a wall, General. We ran soil and atmosphere samples on an area near Norristown. Planet-wide, the radiation levels are stable and acceptable. The air quality is low, but tolerable. I recommend wearing rebreathers until you get oxygen generators in place. I've also checked for tachyon residue. There's no trace of tachyon D on Terrano. If you'll excuse me, General, I am going to go drink myself into a coma.
Ray Freeman smiled.
Maybe I shouldn't have told him.
I'd have shot you if you'd lied.
Once Jim Holman ascended to Admiral, he took charge. Watching him conduct this meeting, I realized just how much I liked Holman's style. He began his command by calling his captains together. The captains of every destroyer, dreadnought, battleship, and carrier sat in the audience. So did every regiment commander from the Marines.
From what we can tell, the aliens will burn Providence Cree sometime within the next 8 days. That gives us 8 days to move 20 million refugees and gather as many supplies as we can. It's not just a question of evacuating Providence Cree. New Carillon, Uchtdorf, and St. Augustine will all be burned within the next 7 days. The next week will be a non-stop rescue operation. By this time next week, we will have transported 32 million people to a new planet. Know this, gentlemen. Anyone we miss will die.
The officers respected Holman. They did not whisper among themselves as he spoke.
Our only chance of survival is to establish a colony on a planet that the aliens have already attacked. I'm not going to lie to you. It's not going to be easy. Scientists have run tests on the air, water, and soil. The air is breathable, but thin. We will take oxygen generators. The water is polluted, but not so badly polluted that it cannot be filtered. We will need to dig a few feet down to plant crops. These are obstacles we can overcome. We are going to colonize Terrano. As many of you know, the Unified Authority patrols that area. Our barges would be vulnerable. The Navy has asked a lot of you over the last month, and you have delivered. Now I'm going to ask even more of you than ever. Some of you will be asked to make the ultimate sacrifice. In order for this plan to work, we will need to draw the UA fleet away from Providence Cree and Terrano. That means opening a front that will draw the Unified Authority's forces away. We are going to invade Earth.
Hell yeah!
We've run a recon mission to evaluate the Unified Authority's military strength. We sent a spy ship into Earth space and found fewer than 60 capital ships patrolling the lanes. They detected our anomaly, and 7 more ships broadcasted in. As far as we can tell, that is their entire fleet, 65 capital ships. It is entirely possible that they have a few additional ships in reserve. They may have as many as 80 ships, but we have seen most of what they have. We're going to send a ground force as well as a naval attack. Crippling their navy will not be enough for us to achieve our objectives. We need to uproot the Unified Authority government once and for all. We need to occupy Earth. Win or lose, there will be no returning from Earth. The Unified Authority has a temporary broadcast station near Mars. We believe they will destroy the station at the first sign of an invasion. Before I assign men to the invasion, I'm going to ask for volunteers. We're going to reserve 1/3 of our fleet to escort our barges. The rest of you will be assigned to the invasion. Any captain who wishes to enlist his ship in the invasion, please stand.
The blinding lights rolled from Holman and down to the audience. It looked like every man was on his feet. The meeting ended much the way it had begun. Holman got the ball rolling by summing up a bad situation. He finished by thanking his officers for their courage, then reminded them that our struggles would extend long beyond the combat.
Once we establish our colony on Terrano, every day will bring new battles. We will need to fight to plant crops and keep those crops alive. Finding water will be a struggle. So will establishing a new nation. Those of us invading Earth will be tasked with governing a hostile planet. You will guard the planet until the aliens attack. Then, if you survive, you will face the same day-to-day challenges that we will face on Terrano. We are going to divide our forces, and neither side will ever know if the other side survived. Earth will be removed from our broadcast grid. The only way we will know if the invasion of Earth succeeded is if it fails, and the Unified Authority attacks us. I came here hoping for a few volunteers. Nearly all of you have volunteered. Because of your bravery, I must decide which of you will escort our barges to Terrano. Those of you I assign to Terrano will have the easier job.
With 8 hours before the attack on Earth was set to begin, I went to visit Ava in her apartment in Hightower, a city on Providence Cree. Ava opened the door to me. She stood in a sheer white robe that might have been made of silk or satin.
Wason?
Ava reached out like a child just learning to walk and wrapped her arms around me. It was the middle of the afternoon. When I saw her in the robe, I thought maybe I had walked in on her and a lover, but that was not the case. It was late in the day and she was alone, the shades on her windows drawn against the sunlight. Her apartment smelled of dirty clothes and inactivity.
Can I turn on the lights?
We don't have electricity. They hooked a generator to the lift. It's the only thing that works on this floor.
Can I open the blinds?
I wish you wouldn't.
I did it anyway. She had aged a decade in the days since I had last seen her. She had changed in ways that time alone cannot accomplish. You sometimes see a fleshy softness in the faces of the depressed. It had happened to Ava, almost as if the muscles in her cheeks had atrophied. And she had lost weight. Her face had been a perfect oval, broken only by the cleft in her chin. Now her face was long, and her cheeks looked sunken. I did not need to ask what happened. I knew. I had gone through it as a young Marine. Maybe I was still going through it.
Do you ever get out?
Get out for what?
For food.
I have my rations.
To talk to people.
What would we talk about?
To breathe fresh air.
If I want fresh air, I can open a window.
They're fixed in place. They don't open.
Oh.
And they must have power going to the air conditioning. You'd suffocate if they didn't.
She turned and walked toward her bedroom. I followed. Ava sat on the bed and her robe fell open all the way up to her thigh, not that she noticed. Her hair hung lank and tangled. The air in her bedroom was even more musty than the air in her living room.
Are you hungry? I can fix you some food. I still have most of this week's rations.
I've eaten.
Well, that's all right then. Do you want to talk about it?
About what?
Neither of us said anything for several seconds.
I had 200 girls in one of my classes.
I realized that I liked her more than ever now that her Hollywood sheen had vanished. The tough, the polished, the beautiful Ava that filled movie screens no longer existed. Given the chance, I thought I might just fall in love with the empty shell that she had left behind. This was a woman scarred by death. A woman who knew my world.
We're going to evacuate Providence Cree.
Where are we going?
They're going to try to resurrect one of the planets that have already been burned.
Terrano?
No.
Liar. I can't go back.
You can't stay here.
It's as good a place as any.
The aliens will be here by the end of the week. If you stay here, you'll die.
Are you going to Terrano?
No.
Then you came here to say goodbye. You always come to say goodbye. Have you noticed that, Harris? You and I, we say goodbye to each other more than anything else.
I love you.
If you are not going to Terrano, where are you going?
Earth. It's a one-way ticket.
I don't suppose it's a social call.
No, not a social call.
Ava listened and nodded, but she did not speak. Time passed.
I love you.
You don't know love. You know war. You know death. You don't know love.
Whatever I felt for Ava at that moment, it matched up with the way I expected love to feel. If I left her alone, she would stay in the apartment and die when the Avatari attacked the planet. I bent down and stroked her hair.
This is our final goodbye.
Thank you.
I went to the Mandela, a warship in the fleet, to visit with Mars. I learned that he and his group of engineers were in the hangar working on the fighters. Curious as to why a group of engineers would be working on the fighters and not the general mechanics, I went to investigate. In the hangar, all three shifts of mechanics had reported for work, and Mars and his engineers had come to join them. Dressed in red jumpsuits, the mechanics and technicians looked like ants crowded around the fighters. I found Mars stooped under the wing of a fighter, inspecting who knew what.
Did Holman bust you down to fighter maintenance?
Mars spun to face me, still holding a laser probe in his left hand, as he saluted me with his right.
I wish to God he had. I'll take Tomcats and Phantoms over Stone Age farming.
You're not excited about Terrano?
Building tent cities and digging latrines? It may be my calling, but no, I'm not excited about it.
It won't be totally primitive. You'll still have tractors and cranes.
We're riding space-age technology into an Iron Age existence.
You can build churches, too.
Yeah. Want to see the surprise we plan in case we run into resistance?
Mars nodded toward the undercarriage of the Tomcat. I squatted and edged my way under the wing, but I did not see anything other than the standard laser array and rockets.
What am I looking at?
We added a hard point for torpedoes. They're torpedoes, the shield busters. They know we have them, but they won't think our fighters are packing them.
I liked the idea. Somewhere down inside me, my confidence grew. A weapon like that could turn the tide of the war. Mars ran his fingers along the wires at the back of a torpedo tube. Then he shined a light into the seam at the top to inspect the joint. He reached for the lid to the electrical panel, paused, then opened it.
Not sure it will work?
Well, it's going to work perfectly.
Why are you opening it?
Because I am here, and it's there, and that's what engineers do.
How many of these are we taking?
None.
What?
They're all going to Terrano.
What the hell are you going to use them for on Terrano? You're setting up a colony. We're the ones going into battle.
It wasn't my idea. Holman's orders.
Holman?
He says we need them for insurance in case the Unifieds get around you. Harris, don't worry. You're going to outnumber the Earth fleet 100-1.
Those fighters could save a lot of lives during an invasion.
General, what you really need to do is appeal to a higher power.
I know. Holman's orders.
No. There's a higher authority than Jim Holman. God helps those who ask for help. You need to pray.
I've never had much luck with prayer.
Mars followed me out from under the wing of the Tomcat.
Have you ever actually prayed?
No.
Whoever came up with that thing about there not being any atheists in the trenches never met you, Harris. I'll pray for you.
While you're asking God to spare my synthetic soul, would you mind asking him to do something about UA specking shielded armor? That's the miracle I'd pray for, if I ever prayed.
God works in ineffable ways.
So do broadcast stations. If by some miracle we find a working broadcast station when we get to Earth, maybe I'll see you again.
Wouldn't that be a miracle?
We loaded men and guns onto the transports as pilots boarded their fighters. In another minute, our ships would enter the broadcast system and the invasion would begin. We'd emptied every corner of the enlisted man's empire. Every working ship would either escort barges or join the invasion. 1,236 ships now prepared to enter Earth space. We had 68 fighter carriers and 200 battleships. We had Tomcats, Phantoms, and Harriers by the hundreds. Our landing force included 1,000 helicopter gunships and nearly 10,000 transports, which we would use to deploy our 3 million Marines. We had an overwhelming force. Why did I not feel confident? When Freeman came to see me, he wore his armor and carried his go-pack. He had a sniper rifle, an M27, laser and particle beam weapons, and grenades.
I ran into Scott Mars. He says he's going to pray for us. I told him to keep his prayers and give us fighters with UA torpedoes.
You gonna tell him goodbye?
Something like that.
Freeman placed his little two-way communicator on my desk.
We need to warn Sweetwater and Breeze about the invasion.
Warn them? Ray, they aren't people. They're software. It's like kissing your bunk goodbye. You might have had some good times together, but that doesn't make it human. Let's give him a call. Next you're gonna want me to tuck him in bed.
Hello, Harris. Has your invasion begun?
The screen did not show an odd pairing of scientists in a lab. It showed a man sitting at an oak desk in a richly furnished office. Tobias Andropov, the youngest member of the Linear Committee, sat alone at his desk.
I must have the wrong number.
We knew they were spying for you. We've been watching all along, Harris. You had to know we could see everything they did. We programmed them. We programmed their environment. We had access to their thoughts. Hell, Harris, we didn't need cameras or bugs to listen in on them. Everything they did took place on our computers.
Then why did you let them help us?
Let them help you? The synthetic brain. Sometimes I think we should have given you clones bigger brains. We didn't let them help you. We let you help us. We wanted you to evacuate those planets.
Bullshit.
Think what you want.
We stole your barges.
Yes, you did. And make no mistake, we will take them back.
You attacked our fleet.
A ship here or there, mostly fighter carriers. Strategic hits. We wanted to weaken you. We were playing with you, testing your abilities. I must say, your navy was always pathetic.
We have enough ships
you
to...
You still don't understand. Harris, it doesn't matter how many ships you send here, they're good as dead. You gave us a scare with that device that you used off New Copenhagen, but it won't work this time. Not unless you plan on destroying the planet.
New Copenhagen?
Ah, I see your fleet has arrived. 68 carriers, 200 battleships. Very impressive.
Just so you know, it's personal between us. I'm coming for you.
Don't you have a transport to catch?
I reached for the communications console, signaled the bridge, and spoke to Captain Cutter.
Better kill the engines. I think they're expecting us.
We searched the space lanes and found only a few UA ships. The Unifieds had 6 Perseus-class ships in the area. These were older ships, the same make as our ships. They didn't pose any threat at all. The Unifieds might have had spy ships watching us, but just as Andropov had said, their fleet had gone. I sat in a conference room with Cutter. We had an audio link to all the top officers in the fleet. Cutter looked at me and shook his head.
It's hard to know what to do when you don't know what you're up against.
We were just off the bridge of the Alexander, a recently refurbished ship that still seemed only partially ready for battle. The engines worked fine. As far as I could tell, the shields worked right. Maybe it was just my nerves.
He knows we're not going anywhere. Not unless he hands over the keys to the Mars broadcast station.
The station is gone. There's no trace of it.
They must have destroyed it.
I don't think so. There would still be wreckage unless they towed it away.
So we're stuck here. What are they doing?
You know, he could be bluffing. It's always possible that we caught the bastard with his pants down and he's trying to stall the attack until his fleet returns.
If it returns.
What?
Well, Holman stole the shieldbuster torpedoes from the ships we destroyed when we took the barges. Andropov thinks we have them. The bastard's in for a surprise if he sends his fleet to Terrano. Holman's still got them.
Holman's battleships are carrying shieldbusters?
Not his battleships, his fighters.
I told him about my meeting with Mars. Cutter listened carefully and smiled.
Brilliant strategy. He's letting the Unifieds go after the nest when they should be chasing the Hornets. The Unifieds will go after the carriers first. They'll home right in on them. Once they do, Holman will slip his fighters right past them. He's going to hit the bastards in the gut and they won't know where it came from.
They'll figure it out before he finishes off their ships.
Those fighters are going to give Holman the element of surprise, and they'll be hard to track. The Unifieds won't know which fighters have shield busters and which ones have lasers. One thing about Holman, he always thought ahead of the curve.
Cutter sat silent while the voices on the communications console debated scenarios and outcomes. One officer suggested we approach slowly and prepare to retreat. Another wanted to send 2 battleships to probe their defenses, then regroup. It sounded intelligent.
No. We go in hard and fast and present a moving target. Whatever they have, it's gotta be a surface-to-space weapon. They might have cannons, but it's probably rockets. It's almost sure to be rockets. A lot of rockets. That's why they haven't rebuilt their navy. They've been allocating their resources to a rocket defense. We need to go in fast, land our marines, and get the speck out of there.
That ended the debate.
God help us if I called this wrong.
I told Freeman about the meeting.
Missiles, not rockets.
How do you know that?
They recently built 3 high-security missile bases around Washington, D.C.
There must be more.
Just those 3.
Why would they build all of them in Washington?
This is the Unified Authority.
Yeah, the whole damn planet belongs to the Unified Authority.
Where are you planning to attack?
The capital.
He was right. They were right. It did not matter where else we attacked. The war would be decided on the eastern seaboard of the former United States.
Damn it!
Freeman watched me silently.
How dangerous?
They're big bases. They have millions of missiles.
So we're screwed.
I can shut them down.
Do you have a way to hack into their system?
I wouldn't even try. The security's too solid.
Do you know how to break into the bases?
No. I bought warehouses near each of the missile bases and filled them with bombs.
You said you weren't sure which side you were going to take.
Do you want me to tell you about the bombs I set up next to your bases?
After speaking with Freeman, I spent 15 minutes throwing together a strategy for establishing a beachhead. Then I told Cutter to launch the invasion. I boarded a transport and sat in the cockpit, in the co-pilot's seat. Beside me, Lieutenant Christian Nobles ran the controls.
Sir, do you know what we're up against?
The sled dragged our transport through the first set of locks.
You're going to have plenty to deal with on the way down. The Unifieds have a new missile defense.
What about the Earth fleet? What do they do with their fleet?
We don't know. If I had to guess, I'd say the bastards sent it to intercept the barges at Terrano.
That sounds like the Unifieds are in the shit.
What do you mean?
We captured the Golan dry docks, right? That left them high and dry without any place to build new ships. We don't have anyone who can design ships. They don't have any place to build them. Either way, you end up stranded once you run out of ships. I bet that's why they're using a missile defense.
I silently stewed over Noble's words as we entered the second atmospheric lock and the huge metal door closed behind us, sealing off the rest of the carrier as the outer hatch opened, revealing space. We left the artificial gravity field. Nobles gave the thrusters a slight kick, and the transport coasted out to space. We were at the head of an enormous armada, flying toward Earth at several million miles per hour. The first wave of fighters led the way, and we followed, an enormous swarm of transports. Ahead of us, I saw the sun, the Earth, and its moon. I used the command link to speak to Ray Freeman. We did not fly down to Earth on the same transport.
Ray, you there?
Yeah.
How long will it take you to destroy the bases?
Depends how far I need to travel.
We're going to try and come in as close to Washington, D.C. as possible. If we run into resistance, you may have a trek.
That was when the shelling began.
Harris.
Harris here.
We found their missiles. We're losing ships. Damn, we're losing ships!
Cutter had planned the pass correctly. Our big ships streaked by at several million miles per hour, traveling so fast that the missiles could not lock in on individual targets.
We lost 27 ships.
They only nicked you. This could end early.
We lost 27 ships passing 400,000 miles outside of Earth's atmosphere at 3 million miles per hour. You'll be entering the atmosphere at 2,000 miles per hour.
Oh, we're going to get nailed. Warn your men. They deserve to know what they're up against.
Cutter signed off and changed frequencies.
This is Captain Donald Cutter of the EMN Alexander. The Unified Authority is using nuclear-tipped missiles to defend its space. The Unified's defense strategy involves flooding our path with these missiles. We can minimize the damage using defensive tactics, but we expect to take casualties. This mission will succeed or fail based on our ability to land our transports in strategic locations. That places a heavy burden on you fighter pilots. We are asking you to give this everything you've got. We need you to escort our transports to Earth. Do not return to the fleet until the Marines have landed. Good luck to you.
If every transport landed, we would start our invasion with 300,000 Marines. That would be the first of four waves, 3,000 transports, each carrying 100 troops and equipment. The second wave would have fewer troops and bigger guns, 200,000 men, plus tanks and artillery. Maybe 500 miles ahead of us, our fighter escort entered into the storm. Missiles began to burst in flashes that, from our transports, looked no bigger than the flame of a candle, but those explosions burned bright in the darkness. Off to the side, Earth revolved as smooth and round as a child's dream. The sun shone down on the far side of the hemisphere, lighting the nearest edge of Europe and farther shore of the Atlantic. And directly ahead of us, men in Harriers, Tomcats, and Phantoms did something that will forever color the way I think of fighter pilots. With missiles slamming into them from every side, they slowed their speed. Had they bashed their way through at full speed, the vast majority of those fighters would have survived the attack. They would have left us behind, and the Unifieds would have renewed their attack on our unescorted transports. I doubt a single one of our slow-flying birds would have survived.
Specking hell, they're almost at a dead stop. 30 seconds, sir, and we'll be in missile range.
Then I saw it. We had nearly caught up to the fighters as they weaved around each other and waited for us. With the Earth turning peacefully in the background, I saw a Phantom take a direct hit. Then we entered the pack and found ourselves as much a target as the fighters that protected us. I did not see the missile that shot toward our bow, but I caught a glimpse of the particle beam that disabled it, and I saw the fighter that fired the beam as she passed. The fighter streaked by so quickly, I could not tell if she was a Tomcat, a Harrier, or a Phantom.
That was close.
That fighter almost hit us.
The missile came closer.
Until he mentioned the missile, I had not understood.
Can you tell how many transports we've lost?
75 so far. The fighters are taking it worse than us. They're down a few hundred.
I barely heard what Noble said about the fighters because I was already trying to raise Freeman on the interlink.
Ray. Ray, are you there?
Here.
We're losing transports. Just making sure you're okay.
Better brace yourself. We're coming in hard.
Before I could react, we slammed into the edge of Earth's atmosphere. Our fighter escort did not lead us down to the planet. We dived through bright mist and empty sky with no ships leading our way. The sky around us was crisscrossed with slowly evaporating vapor trails. The Unifieds would not fire their nuclear-tipped missiles at us now that we had entered the atmosphere. The radiation would have come back to fry them. As we flew through the paper-white sky, thick beams of silver-red light slashed the air around us.
Lasers! Whatever's left of us has already entered the atmosphere. The fighters are headed back to the fleet.
How many transports do we have?
265.
What the speck do we do now?
That left us with 26,000 men plus change. We weren't going to conquer Washington with 26,000 men.
We'd better land. Sooner or later, those lasers are going to wear down our shields.
We had reached the eastern seaboard of the territory once called the United States. This was the seat of power, the capital of the Unified Authority. It was a clear day. We might have been 10 miles out of Washington, D.C. The city skyline rose out of the tree-covered landscape up ahead. Until that moment, the Unifieds had only fired ground weapons at us, and I finally understood why. They were herding us, guiding us toward the capital itself and Joint Base Anacostia Bolin, the largest military airbase on Earth.
Put us down!
We're in the middle of nowhere!
Then he saw fighters on his radar and the flashing amber warning light. Nobles was a good pilot and a smart man. He knew we had a better chance of surviving a crash landing than an aerial assault. We had powerful shields, but no weapons and limited maneuverability. Nobles hit the radio.
Incoming fighters! Drop where you are! Drop where you are!
We nosedived toward the forest. As I watched Nobles steering us into trees, I realized he was using them to slow us. The shields held. Nothing hit the ship itself, but we spun and bumped and tilted and bounced, working our way down the last 30 feet. And then we touched down as delicately as a ballerina completing a grand jeté. Quickly evacuated the transport.